Welcome to Your Home with Team Gale at Coldwell Banker Seacoast Advantage, the show for buyers, sellers, owners, and investors. We're here to give sage real estate advice and take your calls regarding buying, selling, and owning your home. Brought to you by Alpha Mortgage.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jack Gale with Team Gale at Coldwell Banker Seacoast Advantage. Here in the studio this morning with me is Hal Graham. Hal is an appraiser, and as always, this is an interactive show. We'd like anybody that's got any real estate-related questions to give us a call here in the studio. You can reach us at 910-332-6390. That's 910-332-6390. And if you want to talk to a realtor, we've got team agents that are on duty. You can reach them at 910-541-1212. They'd love to hear from you. And again, Hal Graham is an appraiser. And Hal, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I've lived here about 32 years. Went to UNC Wilmington, and I've been a residential real estate appraiser now for 23 years.
Wow. And were you one of the people that came to Wilmington to go to school and just never left?
Absolutely. I found out there was a campus down here, and I really didn't care whether the college was good or not. I was going to school here. One of the lucky ones that was able to stay.
and find a career down here. Yeah. There's a lot of folks that do that. But anyway, what does it take to be an appraiser?
Well, Jack, what you have to do, it's gotten to be quite an extensive process. You have to take quite a bit of coursework. They've just started requiring, I think the requirement starts the first part of next year, a four-year college degree. And you have to have, I think you have to write, it's been so long that since I went through it, but I think you have to write 300 appraisals and do an apprenticeship for a minimum of 2 years.
Wow.
And then you have to pass, of course, the state exam and stuff like that before you can become an appraiser.
And then do you have to go, like, annually, do you have to get
the... We do. We have, much like the broker's license, we have to have, I think it's 24 hours of training every 2 years or something like that.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah.
All right. And Tom just walked into the studio. He's running a couple of minutes late. Good morning, Tom. And again, you want to reach us here at the studio. It's 332-6390. And what kinds of appraisal are they? I mean, how many different types of appraisals are they? Yeah, I mean, specifically just kind of aside from commercial, but specifically on the residential side.
Well, there's several different kinds. The biggest appraisal, the ones we do typically are the URA or the 1004 form, and that involves going in the property, taking notes, getting pictures, measuring. Those are typically the only kind I will do because... As you know, Jack, you can't always tell what a house looks like from the outside.
Right, yeah.
And there's other kinds of appraisals called a drive-by. And essentially, it's just what it says. You drive by the house, take a look at the exterior, and come up with a value. To me, that's just not something I'm willing to do. The liability for me personally is just too much. You never know what's behind those walls. I want to put my eyes on that.
Yeah, I mean, we have people all the time that call, you know, us and they say, you know, what do you think my house is worth? It's, well, I said, you know, they give them a range because you know the neighborhood. You can say, okay, well, you know, if it's, somewhere over in the Ogden area, Jacobs Ridge, I mean, there's a lot of homes that are similar, but you can't, you know, unless you go inside, you really don't know what's there. I mean, they could have really updated it or it could be totally trashed, right?
Absolutely. And I've seen some houses that look fantastic on the outside and, you know, the sheetrock's been torn out of them, you know, because they're foreclosures or whatever. I know you guys see that a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen houses that you pull up in the front yard and you're like, oh, here we go. And it's immaculate inside. So you just never know.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point of homes that I think are you know, 1960s or so. There are neighborhoods where you can have, you know, two that look identical on the outside and somebody's completely renovated with granite countertops and new cabinetry in the kitchen and you know, updated bathrooms and somebody else's is shag carpet and, you know, green appliances just like the day that they moved in or whatever. So that's, I think, a perfect example, too.
Absolutely, Tom. And I think that really homeowners are somewhat getting shorted a little bit if the appraiser doesn't come inside, because you really need to see, like you said, granite countertops, renovated bathrooms, you know, what do the walls look like? And so I think it's very important. Me personally, I feel like you need to get in the house.
Well, and then there's also something that we talk about, among people such as yourself and us in the industry of, is it something that if it doesn't have any walk-in closets, that's something that most people want nowadays? Is it something that only has a half bath in the master? Most, newer homes have a full bath in there. And so there are things like that where technically the house is structurally sound, but it's just not what buyers' tastes are. So, I'm sure that would probably play into your valuation as well.
Absolutely. And we all know how accurate New Hanover County tax records are. and typically that's what, when you're doing a drive-by appraisal, you're looking and it says it's 1.5 baths or 2 bedrooms, and it could be a 3 bedroom. There's mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So,
well, and sometimes there's unpermitted additions.
Yes, there are.
And, on an unpermitted addition, when you go out and look at a property, you take a look at the tax card, and, if you see something and it says, it's a 1.5 bath house and it's 2.5 baths, and you could tell that the new full bathroom has been an add-on. Do you do anything about that?
Well, it kind of, it's one of those things, Jack, that you try to verify permits if you can. Sometimes you just can't tell. Sometimes you show up at a house and there's an addition. It looks like, we all had a 12-pack and went out there with a hammer on the weekend, and that's how it looks. And some of these additions are top rate.
Yep. But the sad thing is, of course, for somebody getting a loan, if it wasn't permitted, that could affect their ability.
Absolutely. We're seeing more and more of that, of people want to see those permits. Mm-hmm. And I did have a situation a couple of months ago where there was an addition at Carolina Beach that was not permitted, and I was not able to give value for it, and they ended up getting the permit guys out and verifying that it was done right and had me back out a month and a half later so I could give credit to it.
There you go.
And what about aesthetic value? Do you consider aesthetic value when you go out and look at a house?
Absolutely. I think that the way a house appears, there's an actual age, which is the chronological age of the house, and there's what we call an effective age. An effective age essentially is, how does the house present itself? It's a 30-year-old house, but it's been completely renovated, and you walk inside and it looks like it's 10 years old. Okay. So it has a big impact on it.
And what about the landscaping? There's a lot of people that spend a ton of money on landscaping to say, "Well, geez, I got $15,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 worth of landscaping in a property." What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's great, Jack. It's always hard to give value for it, but I have a buddy in town. He's a fiend about landscaping, and he will just dump tons of money in his landscaping. And I think when he sells every few years, and I think it helps the marketability of it.
Well, and that's one thing that we always tell sellers too, is that they may ask us actually, years in advance of them actually planning to sell, what we think the impact would be if they make a certain change now. And I say, do whatever works for you in the meantime. Don't worry about, future value, because stainless appliances may no longer be the thing a few years from now, or whatever the case may be. But landscaping is one of those types of things too, where if it's done right, it may not get you more money for your home, but it may help it to sell more quickly, especially in comparison to your next door neighbor that doesn't have any landscaping.
Right. And you guys know what's the curb appeal? And it usually helps the curb appeal.
Well, exactly. That's the first impression. Certainly the sign out in the yard is advertising only what they can see. So if it looks good on the outside, that's certainly going to help.
Absolutely.
And what about a swimming pool? What do you think about adding a swimming pool?
I get that question a lot, Jack. It's I always tell people, if they want to add a swimming pool, if it's important to them and they have kids, add a swimming pool. Now, as far as value, it is not going to contribute the value commensurate with the cost. It's you're not going to get near what you put into it. My personal opinion is, I feel like, depending on the neighborhood, is how much it's going to contribute for you. And I think a swimming pool is more valuable in landfall than it would be, say, in Meadowbrook, which is an entry-level subdivision.
Well, and also, too, I'm not sure if you know the answer to this or not, but I've heard that if somebody is getting an FHA loan, actually having a pool can hurt them, because it's considered a luxury item as far as FHA is concerned.
That, I think I have come across that, Tom, where FHA or USDA, where they don't allow pools. Mm-hmm. And the good news is, we don't run into it much. I've only had it one time, because typically in that price range, there's usually not a swimming pool.
That's true. Yep.
And I don't know why they have a problem with that, but they seem to.
Yeah, well, like I say, I heard that they consider it a luxury item and they don't finance luxury items is what I have heard. I don't know if that's accurate or not. But
well, that's our government.
But if somebody wants to add something to the home, I mean, typically what do you think adds the most value to a property? Say it's a 1980s house and just kind of, probably cost, say, $175,000, you know, in 1985. And somebody was to, say, do some renovations. What would you suggest, you know, that would increase their value the most?
I'd say the first thing that pops in my mind, Jack, is probably kitchens and baths. I think that the kitchens, people love going in and seeing the renovated kitchen and baths. And you guys probably have seen it in your real estate practice where people are willing to pay a premium for something that's already been renovated.
And one thing that I'll mention too, a lot of times I've seen evaluations where, you know, people even on a renovated kitchen may get 85% of what they put into it. They may not get, you know, more than what they put into it unless they did it themselves. If they're able to, you know, if they're a you know, cabinet maker or whatever and they can build it themselves, then great. But a lot of times if you're paying somebody else, you may not get, you know, significantly above. Sometimes you may, but I think a lot of times people assume that, oh, I'm going to get, if I spend, you know, $5,000 to hire these contractors, I'm going to get $10,000 more. And that's not always going to be the case either as far as, you know, appreciation goes. I mean, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier of do what works best for you. And then other than that, I would say in this market, what I tend to tell my sellers is price is everything in our current market. So I would much rather you try and sell the home at a lower price rather than dump, you know, $10,000 into it and then be the highest priced home in your neighborhood. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that.
Well, I think that, you know, they always say, Tom, buy the cheapest home in the nicest neighborhood you can afford.
That's it.
Yeah. And you definitely don't want to be overimproved. I had a house a couple months ago where it was just unbelievably nice, but it was so much nicer. It's almost like I wanted to tell the guy, if we could pick it up, put it on a 18-wheeler and move it, it was perfect. It was overimproved for that neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. I had a bank-owned property where they were asking me to assess the value, and it was one in downtown, and it was built in 1984, and it was surrounded by homes that were built in 1920. It was a two-story home, brick, and all these other ones that are around it are, you know, aluminum siding bungalows or whatever, and I kept trying to tell them that, you know, the location of this one was what was dragging it down. As you mentioned, if it was somewhere else, I would appraise it higher, but when it's the only one around, that brings down its value.
Yeah, I just sold a house, that I had listed for a while, and the house was absolutely gorgeous. It was one of the nicest houses I've ever listed, and I mean, the house was immaculate. The people took wonderful care of it. It was built in 07. They paid $740 or $750 for the home. They had like $850 in the house, between all the upgrades, the landscaping, and everything else. And it was overimproved. It was the first home in the neighborhood. The neighborhood never really took off, never really had any amenities. And, I mean, the house was just stunning. But it, because of the location, and not that the location was bad, it's just that the community had no amenities. And if the house was in landfall, I would have sold it six times over. But because of the location that it was at, we wound up selling for $535.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah. I mean, and I really felt bad for the people. Fortunately for them, they could choked down, you know, taking that money to closing because they owed $570. Mm. Yeah, so I mean, it was, you know, bad things happen to good people. But what about garages? Do garages impact value? You know, having a one car versus a two or a three car versus a two?
They do, Jack. I think that, you know, as far as what it contributes to value, I think it depends on the neighborhood. I think the way I view it is. And I hate to keep coming back to landfall just because most people know landfall, but in landfall, minimum a two-car garage is expected. So if you don't have that, it's going to hurt you a lot more versus, say, hate to come back to Meadowbrook, but I'm going to Meadowbrook where, you know, that's not – what is the norm for that neighborhood? Mm-hmm. You know, the norm for Meadowbrook is probably no garage or maybe a one-car garage. Norm for landfall is two-car minimum. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that, it's going to hurt you a lot more.
Well, and I have a question about that, too, when it comes to bathrooms as well. Do you tend to, if something doesn't have at least two bathrooms or at least three bedrooms, does that, you know, kind of take extra, you know, money off in your mind? Because I know that, you know, 99% of the people that I am showing, they want three-bedroom, two-bath minimum.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, Tom, in the 23 years I've been doing this, it's you see different trends, and it seems like now people just love bathrooms. I mean, they want like 4.5 baths, and it just – I've seen nice houses, some of the stuff built in the 90s. I was looking at something off of Airlie Road, beautiful house, 3,200 square feet, had 2.5 baths. And now that house, if it was built today, would have probably minimum 3.5, mm-hmm. maybe 4.5 or 5. But, yeah, definitely I think that a three-bedroom house is going to sell better than a two-bedroom house.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, that's what we see.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Is if it has four bedrooms, you know, then that's great. But yeah. But if it doesn't have at least three, that
that's
really
right.
kind of
your fourth bedroom is a little cherry on top of the pie, but you can definitely prove that there's a massive difference between a two and a three. I mean, go into any neighborhood, you know, Kings Grand or Meadowbrook or any entry level neighborhood, somewhat, and you'll see your two bedroom sell here, and your three bedroom sell for a lot higher level. Mm-hmm.
They also sell quicker,
of course.
Yeah, I mean the two bedroom homes. Take a long time to sell.
Well, and it's just because, like I say, when you and I are helping people, Jack, I mean, they say three bedroom, two baths. So, I mean, we're not even looking at the two bedrooms. They're not showing up on a buyer's radar.
Right, right.
So.
And not only that, Tom, the other thing, too, I think that, and say that market, that somewhat entry level market, a three bedroom is going to rent better than a two bedroom.
Also true.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's one thing people are thinking, hey, this may be my entry level house, but I might be out of here in a nicer house in 5 years. I may want to keep it as a rental.
And do you like look at rental comps or anything when you're doing your appraisals?
Only when I'm asked to do an appraisal that somebody's buying for an investment, they ask for typically a comp rent schedule, operating income statement, and the comp rent schedule will have comparable rental comps in there to show what that house typically will rent for.
Gotcha.
Because the bank typically wants to, you know. If you and Jack go in and say, we're buying this house and we're going to rent it for $900 a month, well, the bank, you know, they're not going to take your word for it. They want to say, back it up.
Yeah. Oh, looks like we've got a caller coming in. Okay. Good morning. This is Jack. What's your question, please?
Hi. I'm calling about the real estate. You guys are talking about Landfall and Meadowbrook.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I actually live in Meadowbrook, and I aspire to live in Landfall one day, so this is great information. I have a home in Meadowbrook right now, and it's pretty typical. We bought it 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it was our starter home. We had just gotten married, and now we have two children, so we're getting ready to hopefully put it on the market and move up.
Good.
But,
smart plan.
Yeah. We're really excited. Our home is very basic. There's nothing fancy about it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, it's a basic three-bedroom, two-bathroom home, no garage, fenced-in backyard. So I think it would probably make a great starter home for someone else. But just from what you're saying, I want to make sure I understand. You're saying that it would probably be better for us to not really invest in upgrading the kitchen or the bathrooms, just to kind of clean it up and lower the price, I guess, would improve our chances of selling it quickly.
Well, I mean, the best thing to do would be to give our duty agent a call at 910-541-1212, and they can, you know, go and visit your home and kind of tell you your particular situation. But yeah, like mm-hmm. in my general, you know, overall statement to people is yeah, price is king right now. If there are 30 homes in your neighborhood for sale right now, people are typically going to look at the top, you know, or the bottom three, you know, in price or whatever, most likely, and kind of start from there. And then if they don't like those, then they'll look at the next, you know, most expensive ones. But if you're the most expensive one in the neighborhood, you're going to get much fewer showings because, again, those other ones are just a lower price. And that's what the first thing that people are looking at is price. So, you know, if it looks very nice on the inside, is it going to sell more quickly? Absolutely. But like I say, you need to make sure that you don't overprice yourself, is my opinion.
And the other thing, too, I mean, I do agree with what Tom just said, but to add a little bit more to it, the other thing that I would suggest is it really depends on what the condition of the home is inside. I mean, if you've lived there for 10 years, if you haven't painted in 10 years, my suggestion would be, you know, take the rooms that show the most family wear and, you know, try to address that just so that the house will show a little bit better. Carpeting is another thing. But since you have children, and I would imagine your children are under 10 somewhere, and unless you want to move your children out, you know, replacing the carpet probably doesn't make sense at this stage of the game. You could offer like a carpet allowance. That's generally what I tell people to do because, one, you may choose a carpet that somebody else doesn't particularly like. They may want to go with a laminate floor. They might want to do something different. So if you give them a carpet allowance, and what I would suggest is kind of get a rough idea by going to Lowe's or Home Depot and telling them, you know, how much carpeting area you have and get them to give you a rough price on what that would be. That way, when you say, I'm going to give you a carpet allowance of $1,800 or $2,500, you're kind of close to what that would be. What's your take on how?
Yeah, I totally agree. And excuse me. My first house was on a hopscotch court over there.
Okay,
I bought years ago when I was engaged to my wife. So, and I had the basic three-bedroom, two-bath plan. And I laughed because we were scrimping together our money and a fireplace was an $1,800 option. I was too cheap to opt for it. And I lost my first three buyers when I sold that house. But I think these guys are right. Anything you can do to buff and polish it would behoove you guys. I certainly wouldn't go in and renovate a kitchen. You know, it's all about appearance, and like they said, you know, get it as good as you can. If that means painting the walls, and
well, and sometimes it might even be something like maybe you do replace the plumbing fixtures or whatever, or maybe you repaint the cabinet doors or something minor to kind of spruce it up and make it a little bit more contemporary. But you know, we're definitely going to try and give you advice on how to do everything to make it look great without spending a whole lot of money.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely what we're looking for. And what about staging? Is that a good thing for that price range?
It is. Staging is always good for any price range. And one of the things that our team offers to its clients free of charge is we have somebody on the team that's a stager. And she'll come out to the house, and what she'll do is she'll spend a couple of hours with you and then write up a list of things that you can do to your home to help it show better. And then she'll come back after you've call her back and say, okay, you know, what else can we do? And then she'll kind of critique it, you know, the improvements that you make. But the biggest thing is really decluttering, you know.
Right, yeah. And that's difficult with kids. We're just trying to figure out what to do, you know, because how to move the kids out of the house, I guess, when people want to come look at it. And I don't know, I guess people pack up with the pods or whatnot.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing to do, and I was going to suggest that. Get a pod, you know, pack all your, I'll say, your winter stuff or the things that you're not going to use readily, and do it that way. I mean, we're getting short on time here, but, you know, that's the best thing to do. And like Tom said, you know, give one our duty agent a call. We'd be happy to help you. It's 910-541-1212.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
All right, you've been listening to Your Home with Team Gale. We've been in the studio with Hal Graham. How, if somebody wants to get an appraisal, how can they reach you, Hal?
Well, they can call me at my office at 392-6880. And we have Secretary that answers the phone, but if not, my extension is 111, and I'd be happy to help them.
Good.
Or answer any questions.
All right. Well, and if anybody wants to listen to any of our back shows, you can always visit our website at www.teamgale.net. That's TEAMGALE.net. And you can listen to any of this show that you may have missed or any of our past shows. Of course, you know, feel free to give our duty agent a call whenever you need our help. 910-541-1212.
Thank you very much, folks. Everybody, have a great week. Take care.
Bye-bye.